Well, I've already learnt something this morning, a note to self which says, never follow Paul, Edward, Ed Hollenby. You know, I mean, gosh, what a feast we've had already. I don't know whether to suggest it's likely to be downhill all the way from here, because that might be off-putting to everybody else that follows. But Ed, thank you so much. It's been, it was really, really helpful. And I got so engrossed in taking notes, I forgot to think about what I was going to be doing next. But joking apart, it's also set up a really powerful platform. And what I'm pleased about, and I suspect this has to do with the organizers and planners of this event, is the synergy between what you have been saying and where I will be wanting to move us to. So thank you very much for that. A little bit of context before we get into the meat. And the meat will include something around this thing called the idea, which to build on Ed's presentation, it's about helping others to see things from another perspective, to see things slightly differently. So it turns the equality and diversity piece, if you like, literally on its head. So the inclusion, diversity and equality agenda, which also happens to be quite a nice acronym, I think. So we're talking about the idea rather than anything else. Then we're going to explore the why, and that will involve you in a little bit of work on your tables. However, you've had your standing up exercise for the day, so you'll be able to do that sitting down. And then we'll be spending a time just connecting with Hertzberg, this idea of inclusion, which hopefully will create a picture that will help you land the idea of inclusion. And then a performance formula, or rather the performance formula. And the assertion there is this will work in whatever context we are thinking about. Then we'll think about fitting together. And then if we get time, we'll think about alligators in the lobby. And if we don't get time, well, you'll just have to come to the workshop this afternoon. But we'll see how we go. So the Centre for Inclusive Leadership, we're specialists in inclusion, as you might expect, leadership development and so on. And the centre has been around for about 3 years. But really, the shift has been simply to put the name on the tin of the things that are inside the tin. So we've been doing the stuff, and as has been said, I've been doing work of this nature now for a number of years, but now we've named it, and we've come out of the closet, as it were. We've got a very simple mission to help people create environments where people can be their best selves and do their best work, and a fairly large-scale vision to create an inclusive society. I hope you can help us in that, because it's certainly not a two-person job. Okay. For us, the inclusion, diversity and equality agenda is about combating discrimination, promoting equal opportunity, valuing difference, and managing inclusion. And that's really quite key for us. And that comes together as this thing that we call the idea. And we would assert that the idea is morally right, that it's socially desirable, that it's economically sensible, and that it's really, really important for your organization, irrespective of which organization that might be. So the bit of work I'm going to ask you to do is to think about these different elements as to the why. So if you were pushed to agree, and you might want to disagree, and that you can do that on your tables as well, why is it morally right? Why is it socially desirable? Why is it economically sensible? And why is it operationally important for organizations? This notion of the idea. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, this is the way we're going to do it. The tables in this row, I think there's a row. I'll just have a quick look. Yeah, you look kind of moral. So we'll do. So if you do morally right and have your conversation as to why you think it's morally right for you personally, not for one, but for you. Yeah. What makes this agenda morally right for you? And also think about why it's operationally vital for organizations. So morally right and organization. If you do socially desirable, you look kind of desirable. Can't quite see at the back whether you're sociable. But socially desirable and organization, yes. And you're going to, it's about the why. What makes it that way? This one, perhaps not so straightforward. Economically sensible. Thinking globally now, not just for your organization. What makes it economically sensible that we might combat discrimination, promote equality, value diversity, and manage inclusion? Why is it economically sensible, as well as the organization piece? And these two rows, if you do the morally right as well, yeah? As well as operationally sensible. Is that clear? You've literally only got 3 or 4 minutes for this. And I suggest if you spend most of the time on the top one, and they're all going to coffee. Okay. Okay, let's see what we've got in terms of our thinking. I know you've not had much time, but morally right is... I don't know whether anybody's got a mic to run round or whether he's gone to coffee as well. He's gone to coffee. Okay, so anybody from any of these tables, morally right? Any thoughts? Anybody want to share a thought? We've got a thought coming, I think. Morally right because?
Well, the first thing was we found it difficult because we sort of thought we all believe it's morally right, but we'd never actually articulated it. And someone quoted Carl Rogers in saying that we need to be non-judgmental with everyone.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I was thinking was that it's what makes us, morals are what makes us human. So it's an indication that we are human beings if we have a moral compass that we measure ourselves against.
The thing about this one is that it's easy to think about why morals are a good idea, not so easy to think about what my particular moral position is about a particular issue.
Yeah.
So that's the thing to just reflect on.
So
where do you stand morally, irrespective of what your organisation might say its policies are? Because at that point, that helps you to determine, you know, where's your line in the sand? We might take one more from over there, if somebody puts a hand up. Did we have some moral people on this side as well? He's shaking his head. Were you moral? Very moral. Okay, anybody else from over there? Morally right. Anybody else who... Yes, we're up.
We'll do it between us. We just picking up the point about morals being different. We often don't even have that conversation. So it's creating that openness and that environment to start to have those kind of quite difficult conversations. So what are your morals? What are your morals? And being able to have that in a non-judgmental, very exploratory and open way.
Yeah, but if I can use the beach ball, thank you, the beach ball idea, what are you seeing on your side of the beach ball when it comes to this notion of morals? And often when we think about morality, we like to think, well, there is a sense in which we all should have some kind of moral compass, as opposed to asking ourselves which direction is our moral compass facing. Here are some prepared earlier, but things that people have said in the past. It's morally right because we're all created equal. And that was in a small workshop, and somebody else said, well, I'm not so sure about that because I look around and I see quite a lot of inequality, even from birth, as it were. And somebody else said, maybe it's not just that we're created equal, but we all have this sense of an intrinsic value. So some of us might have the big house and several cars. Some of us might have nothing at all, but we all have an intrinsic value. Somebody else said, and my personal favourite really, it's morally right because everybody matters. Now, why do I bang on about morals? At the end of a day or a week, if you're clear about where you stand, where your values are, then that's the basis against which you ask yourself how your week has been. So I say to myself around this agenda, I absolutely believe everybody matters. And then I get to the end of a day and I say to myself, given that you believe everybody matters, what were you doing in that conversation with so-and-so? Because that really did not demonstrate your belief about everybody mattering. So yes, it's a moral compass, but it only works if you A, know where your compass is, and B, know how to use a compass. So where are you around this agenda as opposed to what you think your organisation should have? Okay, what about the next one? Socially desirable. Any thoughts? We've got a hand here. Mic coming. Oh, we've got a fight. Yeah? No, you've given up. No. Okay. In honour preferring one another, I think. Socially desirable. Why is it good for society?
Hi, so we were saying that quite often things are labelled in our society around difference and and it's used divisively. And actually, how much better would it be if we could create environments where people can interact as equals, where they can be themselves and remove some of these barriers and sort of challenge some of our innate tribal nature, mm-hmm. so that actually the labels of difference are, we try to make the most of that difference rather than try to make everybody be the same.
Yes.
So we use it to bind us rather than to separate us.
Great thoughts there. Do you know, one of the things I hope that you'll take away from this part of the presentation is the idea of your own nutshell. So that, not necessarily my words, but having your own nutshell, whereas somebody says to you, why does this agenda matter? You're able to say, well, I think it's morally right because da-da-da-da-da. I think it's socially desirable because of this. I think it's economically sensible. And I think it's good for the organisation because of this, this and this. But that you've owned that. And I think all too often this agenda, the why of this agenda, is because, well, there's a rule or there's a law or we've got a policy. But where are you? Because that's what makes the difference around this piece. So socially desirable creates community cohesion, makes for happier citizens. I mean, there's nothing wrong with being happy, you know. It makes people feel safer, makes for healthier citizens. I don't know how many HR-type people there are in the room, but how many people go missing on a Monday because actually they've had their weekend away from the stresses and strains of an unhealthy environment? And so, you know, staying at home on Monday seems to be the best option. And individuals are able to find their place, we get less conflict and so on. And by the way, these ideas are not from me. I've kind of curated them, if you like, from events such as this. So economically sensible, not always the most straightforward. We've got a hand already. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. On our table, we talked very much, if we're talking from an economically sensible viewpoint, it's about making the very best of the resources you've got available, and that's probably embracing the different skills and talents that you've got within an organisation or wider. We also talked about it being good for well-being generally, and also talked about the fact that it embraces cultures. It brings other cultures in when you're talking about economics and dependencies and demographics too. We also talked about it widening the customer engagement field. One of the things that we talked about as well about creating a heightened understanding of others, and something Angie brought up was around about buying commercially and the fact that relationships are so important when you are sort of buying and you're looking at finance. Our relationships are important because sometimes, from a moralistic point of view, it might stop people from engaging with you if you haven't got a moral compass, and that will affect the economic radar.
Okay, so quite a conversation around here. Anything nearer the back? Well, I'm conscious that we've taken a lot of front tables.
Just to add to that, very comprehensive response from Phil's table. We did also discuss how the world is smaller nowadays, and we all need to think globally, and that means that economically it makes sense to recognise diversity. And also, it doesn't make any economic sense to exclude anybody from opportunity because everybody has plenty to contribute.
Yeah, absolutely. I sometimes say, and I'm going to say it again now, that the answer is inclusion. Now, what was your question? Okay. Straying into some potentially dodgy ground, if people north of Watford had felt included, we might not have had Brexit. Well, we might not have Brexit anyway, but that's another question. If people in the Rust Belt of the USA had felt included, we probably wouldn't have Trump, and so on and so on. This is a global issue. It's not just about what's going on in our team, in our organisation. So encourages international trade was one of the biggies that came out from a group. Strengthens economic links, which reduces the likelihood of war. We're talking big stuff here when this agenda is in place. Think Northern Ireland. Think prior to the Good Friday Agreement. The focus of the Good Friday Agreement that came out was actually about managing inclusion, combating discrimination, promoting equal opportunity. It's a very, very powerful and important driver. All right, finally, organisationally. You all did that, but what about this group? Anything around the organisations that came out? Why is it good? Why is it important? Why is it necessary for organisations, this agenda? Somebody at the back. I know you sat at the back because you didn't want to be noticed, but I can see you. Anybody from any of the back tables? Why is it... organisationally important? Why is it vital for organisation that this agenda's in place? We can get a mic to you. Do we have a hand? Yes, we do have a hand.
Yes, basically because the community is your customers, so you want your organisation to represent the customers that you serve. So by getting a more diverse, inclusive organisation, you're going to be a better organisation to the community you serve.
Great, thank you. Anybody else? Why is it good for the organisation? Did you have any other thoughts? Or did you not get to that? Yes, we've got a hand, we've got two hands.
Organisations are people.
Now there's a thought.
Because I think in our sector, we are responsible for and to our communities, and our communities are combined from everybody. They are diverse, and we are responsible for ensuring that all our diverse communities' needs are met.
Absolutely.
Fundamentally.
Okay, well, look, we've had three things. Operationally vital, because it avoids the cost of discrimination, and we'll look at what those costs might include in a moment. It increases the quality and quantity of production, and it makes organisations more attractive. Especially these days, younger people, they look at organisations, including public sector organisations, and frankly, if they don't see and believe there's going to be a sense of inclusion, that's going to be important to that generation in a way that it perhaps wasn't to mine. It wasn't necessarily on the agenda for my generation, but it's very much something that... current generation of graduates and school leavers are concerned about. So it avoids the cost of discrimination. These costs include fines, legal fees, reputation, staff morale, loss of contracts, management time, HR time, you name it. There are major costs to discrimination. And what's really interesting and alarming and problematic is that many of these costs are suffered even if there is no actual discrimination, but there is a perception of discrimination. A lot of these things kick in. It increases quality and quantity of production. We've got the eggs because somebody said in one of the workshops, happy chickens lay more eggs. And one of their pedantic colleagues said, actually, chickens don't lay eggs, hens lay eggs. But there you go. It decreases staff turnover. Staff are prepared to go the extra mile. All sorts of things kick in. when people feel included. And it makes organisations more attractive to potential staff, investors, stakeholders, as well as current staff. There's a whole range of things, and I would really encourage you to get more articulate with the why. Why is this important? Make like you've got to answer that three-year-old. You know the three-year-old who's always saying, yeah, but why? Why? And I think that we've tended to skip that around this agenda, especially in the public sector, dare I say, because we are concerned in the public sector about making sure that the rules and regulations and the laws, especially the anti-discrimination legislation, are met. We're going to unpack some of this stuff now in a moment and perhaps begin to see that those things are perhaps not as critical in the long run as we might have taken them to be. So it's morally right, socially desirable, and so on, and it's underpinned by legislation. It's an and, not a because. It's an and, it's not a because. So shout at me. What's the answer? What's the only costs you would not face if there was no discrimination, anti-discrimination legislation? The fines and legal fees. You would still suffer reputation, morale, contracts, management time, HR time. And by the way, they've all got big pound signs attached to them. Okay, so in corporate terms, we are thinking about legislation, and it requires organizations to provide stuff, and it requires individuals in organizations to behave in certain ways. That's the corporate end. For the individual, though, the individual perspective, it's about not being discriminated against. It's about experience and access. And one of the challenges that I think we face in public sector and private sector organizations, actually, is that when an individual presents themselves and says that they don't believe that they've got good access, or they believe that they may be experiencing discrimination, we often check out what the rules are, what our policies are, and say, well, we've got a policy on this, so that can't be happening. Right? Or we investigate to see whether a law has been broken or a rule has been broken. And if there isn't any breaking of rules or laws, we find there is very little that we can do in order to deal with the individual. But we'll come perhaps to that in a moment or two. Diversity. And we're going to just... That was equal opportunity. This is diversity. There's a big exercise we can do around that, but those of you who are coming to the workshop will expand on that. However, just to say briefly, it's about difference. Many organizations have got all sorts of really fancy, if I may say so, definitions of diversity. You can capture it in one word. Diversity is difference. Period. A whole range of differences, but it's only difference. That's all it is. And then we've got inclusion. See, diversity is stuff. Inclusion is an emotion. Inclusion is how we feel, whether we feel respected, valued, safe, trusted. We're stuck with diversity if we've got two middle-aged, middle-class white men who are Protestant, who might even be twins. They're different. Yeah? We're stuck with that. And we can't manage diversity, by the way. So any of you who have got a policy called managing diversity, can I suggest you maybe not rip it up, but change the title? Because you can't manage diversity. It's a given. Who's been on a time management course? What did you learn to manage? Yourself, okay? Because we're stuck with time, aren't we? We're stuck with time. We just have to manage ourselves. Around this agenda, what we manage is inclusion. And that's not just being pedantic, because many of us, when we talk about and think about managing diversity, and for people that you might be supporting or managing, very often the subtext of that is about managing the problems caused by diversity. That's the subtext. You know, life was so easy in the time when I thought there was no diversity, right? Could just get on with it. Now people are talking about diversity and I've got to manage it. God, what a problem that is. If we talk about managing inclusion, it completely changes the thinking. It does something, I'm not quite sure what, in our head. We're managing inclusion in order to enable people to be their best self and do their best work. Hertzberg, familiar with him? Yeah, you've been there, I'm sure. The two-factor theory, hygiene factors, job security, salary, and so on and so forth. That causes people to not leave, okay? It doesn't cause them to work harder. We do a lot of work with them in the banking sector, and they pay some people a lot of money. It doesn't necessarily make them work harder or stay there, and they might actually leave if they can get more money. However, if they get their act together in terms of the motivation factor, responsibility, personal development, recognition, and so on, that's a driver. Now, in days gone by, people thought that equal opportunity might have been a motivating factor. But frankly, it isn't. Sorry to say that, for those of you who have got really great policies, but I did not go home to my wife when I used to work in a public sector organization and say, we've got a new equal opportunity policy today. I feel so motivated. Right? It doesn't happen. It's important and necessary. Its absence will cause people to leave or to seek somewhere else to be or to feel unsafe, but it is not a motivator. It's a hygiene factor. Inclusion is the driver. Inclusion is the one that causes, is the idea that causes people to go the extra mile and so on. Okay, moving quickly on. By the way, I'm staying for the whole day if you're interested, so do collar me on some of these things because I'm conscious that moving through this at pace. Not being discriminated against does not mean people feel included. Not being discriminated against does not mean people feel included. And I think many organisations in the public sector, and I've done a lot of work in different government departments, spent a number of years in the Foreign Office and worked with public sectors at local level as well, spent time in Manchester, kind of hopped over Birmingham, I'm afraid, and went to London. And there was a lot of good work around making sure that people were not discriminated against. What was not understood, and I'm thinking now back in the 80s and 90s perhaps, what was not understood was that this had nothing to do with whether people then felt included. It just meant they weren't discriminated against. Important and necessary, but insufficient. So we got these three ideas. Equality legislation protects the individual's right to be different. Okay, so you are protected under the law to be you. You're protected. Diversity is simply difference. But it's a culture of inclusion in your team, in your division, in your organization that enables you to make a difference. And that's about the extent to which we can get really great at managing inclusion. Who loved algebra at school? I can see people shaking their heads at the back there. One or two hands. You're obviously the right thumb people. Okay, K plus S plus J, yeah, stay awake. K plus S plus J, close brackets, multiplied by A to the power of T equals P. 30 seconds in your group, tables to work out. These are proper words, words that you'll be familiar with and know. The P stands for?
Performance.
Performance, there you go, you're up and running. 30 seconds to work out the other letters. Okay, let's see what we've got then. We'll start at the back of the room. So you'll have to shout. We're looking for K, stands for?
Knowledge.
Knowledge, there you go. What we know, important, necessary, vital, but insufficient. And we have to add to that, coming forward. Oh, yeah. What we know plus what we can do. Yes, I often think about the example of a child being taught to ride a bicycle. We might talk to them about, you know, this is a saddle, this is a bit you sit on, you know, these are your brakes, try not to put the front one on its own. And then we might be helping them, holding the back as they develop their skill. And then they add to that the J.
Judgment.
Perfect, yeah. And until we're clear about their judgment, we're not going to allow them to ride to school, right? I talked about working in the banking sector, and people often think of investment banks as being of a particular culture. Well, I tell you, the culture is very broad. One of our clients, who I'll represent as being over here, for them, and I'm not sure that they were entirely joking, at a very senior level, when I asked this question, they said the J stood for jail. I won't tell you which particular institution. And another bank, who I'll represent by being over here, they said the J stood for joy. And I thought, ah, wonderful. And actually, their cultures represented that. You could see the difference. Okay, close brackets. Multiply by A.
Attitude.
Oh, you're on fire. Attitude. You will have all worked with people, I'm sure, whose knowledge, skills, and judgment have been great. Or least adequate, but their attitude has been poor and it's driven their performance down. The thing about attitude is, though, it also leaks, doesn't it? So it can impact on others and other teams as well. The fact that the attitude leaks, though, is also helpful if they bring a positive attitude, because that can be a driver as well. So multiplied by attitude to the power of T. Now, this is where I generally get a whole hatful of really powerful T's, but not the T I'm looking for. I'll just give you a warning on that. Okay, time is important. The T that I'm looking for needs time, but it's not time. Trust is central to this T, but it's not trust. Team is vital, well, important anyway, to this T, but it's not team.
Thinking.
No. But it's a good thought. Did I hear together? Yeah, together. No. Any other T's?
Talent.
The talent we might pick up as the KS and J as a kind of acronym. Task. Sadly, no.
Trust.
We've had trust. Tenacity, that's really good. But if you keep on keeping on with this T, doing it well, that will be really important. How are we doing? Tolerance is great. Let me say something about tolerance very quickly. We British are said to be very tolerant. Is that right? Yeah? Especially around this agenda. It's a bit double-edged, though. Again, going home to my wife, I said, I had a really good day today. They tolerated me. So be careful with tolerance around this agenda.
Transferring.
Now, I've had a lot of... That's the first time I've had the transfer. It's not right, but it's interesting. Teachability.
That's it.
Is it?
Trait.
Oh, wow. Traits. You're into psychometrics, are you?
Yeah.
Transparency is a good word, but not the right one. Is it training? I was waiting for training. If it was training, I would add another naught to all of my invoices. Right, okay, let me ask you a question which will give you the answer. To what extent is your attitude affected by how you are treated? So the T stands for? Treatment. Knowledge plus skills plus judgment multiplied by attitude to the power of treatment Those of you who are coaches, how many times have you sat and thought to yourself, gosh, I can see why this individual that I'm coaching is having so much trouble with their direct reports because of the way they seem to be treating them? It's about treatment. It's about how do we enable not just the manager, not just you as directors or leaders, to treat people, but to create an environment in which everybody treats each other equally well. And that's the driver. The T stands for treatment. And the fact is that it's the we often don't think about it. I have done this exercise thousands of times to tens of thousands of people, and I think we're only up to about 50 people or 50 times where treatment has come out from the conversation we've just had. So don't feel bad. It's relevant, it's necessary, but we don't always think about it. So T stands for treatment, and B plus C equals T. What I believe about you and what I'm committed to in relation to you is going to drive my treatment of you. And sometimes my belief is unconscious. Okay? I'm coming to Birmingham. Oh, know what they're like up there in the West Midlands. Oh, yeah. It's all subliminal. And I treat you as a consequence of that, even though I might not even be aware of it. We're talking about these days unconscious bias. That's what drives this kinds of thinking. Very quickly, we'll pick this up at the workshop. If this sounds like blatant advertising, then fine. We often talk about fitting in. How many of you have said to somebody who's relatively new, how are you fitting in? Okay. Generally, as you walk past them. And their answer is, fine. Of course, it's not supposed to be a conversation, it's a ritual, right? Fitting together changes the conversation. How are we fitting together? Changes the conversation. A lot of people at this table here. If three other people brought their chairs to sit here, I guarantee you wouldn't just sit there and look at them, you'd all shuffle around, right? We do it in some situations automatically. We fit together. But sometimes in organization cultures, we cause people to have to fit in. And so we lose what they might be bringing by forcing them to just fit into the space that was available. Scaffolding, well, we've got equal opportunity policies, we've got people responsible for equal opportunity, we've got groups, you know, the gender group, the race group, the disability group, all scaffolding. Two things to say about scaffolding, more about this later. Scaffolding, generally speaking, makes the building look ugly. People are frightened of scaffolding. We kind of change the scaffolding, but we never do any refurbishment. The people who work on the scaffolding aren't welcome in the building, and so on and so on. Be wary of scaffolding. And final thought before we break. Alligators in the lobby. For those of you who might be interested in driving more diversity of whatever sort in your team, in your organization, be more effective yourself, there's a good chance that the people that you're trying to attract are seeing alligators in your lobby. Not only that, they have grown attached to their ankles and they do not want to lose them. Therefore, they're not going to cross your lobby because they can see alligators. Your task is to try and work out what they are seeing as alligators and get rid of those alligators. Your big challenge is that different groups of people will see different alligators. And just because you've tamed one alligator for one group, don't believe you've necessarily dealt with them all. So you need to be on the lookout for what is it that people are seeing about my team, my organization, my area that might cause them to think there are alligators in my lobby, and what can I do about it? Have a good break.